Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu the directorship of the company and is also one of the largest donors to the Israeli occupation forces in history. Nancy Pelosi even went so far on CNN as to state that Benjamin Netanyahu attempted to interfere in the US elections. The United States does have a threat to its sovereignty, but it isn't from China.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul's AM University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest contributor today is the celebrated British-Iraqi hip-hop artist Loki. He hosts the Watchdog podcast for Mint Press News that investigates secretive organisations and powerful vested interests. He's also a regular contributor on other media outlets like Double Down News. In recent years, he's gained a reputation as a cerebral commentator on international affairs in general and the crisis in Palestine in particular. And he's joining us today from London via Skype. Welcome to the show. David, why is it, do you think, that who owns TikTok it sort of enrages both the United States hawks and the Israelis so much?
Well, the main reason, of course, is because young people use it. And young people are, in particular, virulently pro-Palestine. And yeah. That's what they don't like. They can't stand the fact that that overwhelmingly, if you look at TikTok, the messages that you get are pro-Palestine. There's hardly any, by comparison, pro-Israel messages, despite the best efforts, one, of the Israelis in trying to flood it with messages, and two, TikTok itself in trying to regulate the algorithm. So it's because they are losing on TikTok. So, of course, they have to find a way to explain that, and the way to explain that is to say, oh, it's the Chinese. Chinese doing this. No, it's not the Chinese. We know it's the State Department people who are running it. People from the high echelons of the American national security apparatus are in there. It's been shown conclusively. So what they don't want is for there to be a massive outpouring of pro-Palestine content on social media, and they can't regulate it because it's done by young people who they don't understand and can't control.
And yet they've said, haven't they, that it's got to be bought by an American company, haven't they?
It's already not owned by a Chinese company. The whole thing is an absurdity.
Yeah, it's really strange, isn't it? Anyway, but Loki, it's not only those supporting Palestine, is it, who actually use TikTok?
Well, Israel now finds itself in an interesting position because on one hand, it incentivized and encouraged its soldiers to do TikTok videos, quote-unquote, thirst trap videos to try and beautify the image of the Israeli occupation forces. But what that led to also was Israeli military personnel sharing evidence of their own war crimes on the app, which were then entered into the ICJ submission for South Africa. And so in a way, it's a double-edged sword for Israel. On the other hand, what they also saw was people across the world using it to unpick the propaganda that Israel was pumping into the atmosphere. And TikTok, it was argued by Israel lobbyists, was somehow advantaging or algorithmically encouraging pro-Palestinian content, when actually those that attempt to use TikTok will find quite the opposite is true. Many pro-Palestinian accounts have been banned from TikTok with very little explanation.
Well, David, I mean, Latifa there mentioned the Anti-Defamation League in her report, otherwise known as the ADL. I mean, this organisation, we've mentioned it on the show numerous occasions. I mean, they pop up all over the place, don't they?
Well, I mean, people talk about how AIPAC buys political candidates in the US. Well, yeah. The AIPAC isn't the only element of the Israel lobby. The ADL is a key element, has been for over a century now. And it's a spy agency. It's there to spy on pro-Palestine protesters or Muslims or anyone who is critical of the state of Israel, and sometimes even those who were critical of the state of South Africa under apartheid were spied upon by the ADL. So it's there to sabotage pro-Palestine movements, and of course it's what it's doing in relation to TikTok. It's trying to encourage this idea that this is a Chinese company or that it's too pro-Palestine and to try and undermine it. So it's the spy wing, the sort of open spy wing of the Israel lobby in the US.
Well, Loki, what kind of methods then did the ADL use to pressure TikTok?
I think it's important to understand that the line is not clear where the ADL begins and the US security state ends. So the ADL is very much a product, though it has far deeper roots, of course, but in its present manifestation, a product of the bilateral security state between the US and Israel. It has a revolving door between it and the FBI. Several high-ranking figures in the ADL have come directly out of the FBI. And in fact, James Comey, at the time the head of the FBI, said the relationship between them and the ADL has never been closer. The ADL is actually the largest non-governmental trainer of law enforcement in the US. But the way that they mobilized around TikTok was very interesting. They made use of well-known Hollywood Islamophobe Sacha Baron Cohen, who has for many years been involved in the making of films which have buttressed the stereotypes that alienate Muslims across the Western world. But they mobilized him and sent him to TikTok to try and bully the platform and threaten them with this allegation that TikTok was responsible for the greatest increase in anti-Semitism since the Nazi regime of World War II. Patently false, complete rubbish. And of course, the ADL benefits from very close relationships with the creme de la creme of Hollywood and US celebrity, the US celebrity world. But they are also in a situation where they are becoming increasingly desperate when faced with the wave of pro-Palestinian feeling in the shadow of the Zionist genocide in Gaza.
Mm. Well, of course, the ADL were involved in a similar shakedown, weren't they, against Elon Musk?
Yeah, there was a sort of backwards and forwards, wasn't there? They sort of threatened Elon Musk with this advertiser boycott, and advertising revenues precipitously declined. And Musk then went to Israel with Netanyahu and came back and said he was very impressed by all that, and then started to make moves in the Zionist direction. But he also said that he wasn't going to give in to this advertiser boycott, no, which he was meaning the ADL's boycott. And it was a sort of another bit of to and fro, and then of course he gave in, and there's been various signs that they're that X, or Twitter as it used to be called, have been giving into Zionist demands and implementing those demands across the platform.
Mm-hmm. Well, Loki, I mean, how does all this fit into the wider war against China then?
Well, the United States has 400 military bases situated around China. It has US forces on an island controlled by Taiwan that is just a few miles from the Chinese border. They have been constantly elevating the propaganda against China in the US media, and they have been seeking to take measures to build sacrificial lambs throughout the West. Of course, China is the number one trading partner for the vast majority of Western countries, including this one and including the United States. What this is about is the US being the number one producer in the world for over 100 years, and then that mantle moving to the Chinese. But of course, we have to remember that before the founding of the East India Company and the initiation of the British Empire, which spanned at its zenith over 14 million square miles of the planet, both China and India represented a far an exponentially larger percentage of global production than the United States or Britain ever did. And so actually the British Empire established a sort of disfigured global order in which this tiny place was able to use other territories in the world, not only for captive labor, but also for free resources and also captive markets. And so it was that way that you had the development of Anglo-Saxon supremacy throughout the world. But China is pushing back the clock on all of that, and the world is returning to a more natural economic equilibrium. So the United States is doing everything it can to try and push that back, with the US military industrial complex leading the way. So TikTok fits in very clearly into that order of events, and it is really swept up as a moral panic, this idea of TikTok corrupting children, for one, but also TikTok supposedly being a site of foreign espionage.
Yeah. No, no, indeed. Well, look, we'll come back to our discussion in a moment, because we've got another report now about TikTok's links to a pro-Israel company, which in turn is linked to the CIA.
The idea that China is spying on US citizens via TikTok becomes even more ridiculous when you discover that the data gathered by the company in the United States has actually been diverted to pro-Israel CIA cutout company Oracle as part of a massive deal known as Project Texas. The Oracle company was founded by Larry Ellison in 1977. The firm adopted the name of a CIA operation, and the first service it provided was helping the intelligence agency build a database. Oracle later hired David Carney to head its Information Assurance Center. Carney had previously been the third highest ranked employee at the CIA, where he had worked for 32 years. Today, Oracle is the world's second biggest IT software company, and Larry Ellison is the seventh richest person in the world. He is still the top shareholder in Oracle and works as the chief technology officer, as well as sitting as the executive chairman of the company, despite passing the role of CEO to Israeli Safra Katz. Larry Ellison was also instrumental in Elon Musk's bid to buy Twitter, providing him with $1 billion to pursue his takeover. Less well known is the closeness of Ellison and, in fact, the whole company to Israel. Over a period of a decade, Ellison donated over $26 million to the Israeli military. The current CEO of Oracle has explicitly stated the company's pro-Israel bias. Safra Katz exclaimed, "We're not flexible regarding our mission, and our commitment to Israel is second to none. If our employees don't agree with our mission to support the state of Israel, then maybe we aren't the right company for them. Larry and I are publicly committed to Israel." The extent of the company's relationship with Israel is even more clearly seen in the report that Ellison even offered Netanyahu the position of director at Oracle. Project Texas also led to an influx of agents from the US security state into TikTok, like Rebecca Pober, who went from her post at the Pentagon to become a US policy manager at TikTok. The company's head of data public policy for Europe is Jade Nestor, who was the State Department's Director of Internet Public Policy. Another interesting individual at TikTok is recruiting coordinator Katrina Villacisneros, who was part of Army Cyber Command, the US military unit that oversees information warfare online.
I see Larry Ellison was mentioned in that report there, David. Just say a word or two, will you, about him and his links to Israel.
Well, you couldn't make this up, could you? I mean, this is the seventh richest person in the world who is the runs the second biggest IT firm in the world. And the company says that it will not even tolerate employees who think differently about the Zionist entity. And they can go elsewhere and work for another company. And the process by which they are involving themselves with TikTok is the process that they've done in many other companies. They have massive contracts, of course, in the UK as well. And what we see then is that the data which they are managing for in these contracts are this data which is, you know, which is clearly available to Israeli intelligence. So this is a massive, massive scandal. And whenever we talk about this kind of thing, people say, this is nothing to do. But this is a real scandal. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is an Israeli intelligence operation to penetrate the data systems of the largest organizations in the world, including governmental organizations, which have a national security component. Mm. The fact that they're now penetrating TikTok as well as many other companies, and that they're putting in place people who are ex-US spies and from the US national security apparatus is truly astonishing. But, you won't find this in the mainstream media at all.
Mm. I was going to say, where is the corporate media then?
Nowhere.
How would you explain that? I mean, it's very odd, isn't it?
That's a much longer answer you asked me to do. But you know, the media, of course, are structurally opposed
as we've actually touched on in previous shows. But Loki, how does Oracle then go about obtaining contracts here in the UK?
Well, the interesting thing about Larry Ellison is that he is also a component of the campaign against Elon Musk and Twitter, because, of course, he borrowed Elon Musk $1 billion in order to buy the platform. In addition to that, Larry Ellison is so close to Benjamin Netanyahu that even though Ellison is supposed to be a prosecution witness in the eternally delayed corruption trial that Netanyahu must undergo when he's finished genociding Gaza, Ellison has met with Netanyahu several times on his private Hawaiian island, and he even saw to it that his own lawyer and the lawyer of Israeli intelligence agent Arnon Milchan, another supposedly prosecution witness in the trial, was given to Benjamin Netanyahu for the trial. So all manner of corruption and conflict of interest seem to be at play here. In terms of domestically, Oracle stores the data for the British Ministry of Defence, for the Home Office, for the British Foreign Office, and even for the British National Health Service. Now, the very month that Larry Ellison's company obtained this massive contract with the British government, you had the cancelling of Larry Ellison's Ellison Foundation charity, which operated here and employed the father-in-law of Boris Johnson, who was at the time the Prime Minister, as its head. And you know, Boris Johnson's father-in-law received £500,000 wage per year from Larry Ellison's charity at the same time that Ellison was employing other British government high-ranking employees. At the same time, he was vying for a contract from the British government. To me, that's an open and shut case of conflict of interest.
Well, a bit of a rhetorical question now then, David, but do you think any of the data that we've discussed is safe in the hands of Larry Ellison and Oracle?
Well, I mean, from the outside, you can say that obviously people will be sceptical of that.
Yeah,
But you know, what do we have? Do we have any kind of due diligence from the Ministry of Defence, from the Foreign Office, from the Home Office? These are, of course, the three government departments in the UK which are responsible for all of the intelligence operations of the British state, for GCHQ, MI5, MI6, and all the rest of the military intelligence as well. So this is an open and shut case of a national security problem, which the national security establishment of the UK steadfastly refuses to face. Mm-hmm. It simply won't look at it, and you've had what effectively are massive bribes to senior civil servants, and indeed to the former the Prime Minister's father-in-law. I mean, this is an extraordinary situation. Mm. There should be a public inquiry on this in the UK, but there's not a whiff of it anywhere in public debate.
No, indeed. So, I mean, it's not only the media falling down on the job, but the politicians who are supposed to be holding these sort of organisations
and the intelligence agencies. The intelligence agencies should be leading an investigation of this.
Sure, indeed. Well, Loki, I mean, are we seeing an antagonism developing, do you think, in the relationship between China and Israel?
Well, this is a fascinating question, Chris, because immediately after October 7th, the Chinese government refused to condemn the operation. In addition to that, Israel, since the beginning of its genocidal campaign in Gaza, has charged that China is unofficially operating sanctions against Israel on the dual-use civil and military exports, which normally are sent from China to Israel because they just haven't been coming in. Now, supposedly, there is a bureaucratic reason behind it, but Israel is convinced that China is targeting it. In addition to that, when Israel cancelled the work permits of 65,000 Palestinian construction workers in the aftermath of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, what you saw was Israel seeking to fill that gap with 100,000 Chinese workers. The Chinese government then banned its citizens from going and working in Israel. We know that around 30,000 Chinese citizens were working in the Zionist entity prior to October 7th. At least 20,000 of them have left. And what we also know is that during this time, perhaps as revenge for the unofficial sanctions issue, you have seen the Israeli port of Haifa, which previously was controlled by a Shanghai corporation. The Chinese had invested a huge amount of resource in developing the Haifa port. It's now, during this period, fell 70% under the control of an Indian billionaire. So there certainly is some level of antagonism developing within the Israel and China dynamic, for sure.
Well, David, I mean, what sort of impact then do you think there would be with a kind of fallout in the relationship between China and Israel in the region there?
Well, we already know what some of the impacts have been. We already know that the Chinese brokered the deal between Iran and the Saudis, which also helped to end the conflict in Yemen,
yeah,
and put Israel in the position of being able to enforce a boycott of an embargo on the Red Sea. We already know that the Chinese have been behind the overtures between the Syrian government and the Saudis, and indeed by Hamas and the Saudis, Hezbollah and the Saudis. These are all massive changes in the region, which mean that the region is moving away from having to separately fight Israel, and indeed are moving in a direction which means that China will increasingly come to be seen on the side of what effectively is the resistance axis. Now, it's not doing that openly as yet, but the overtures it's making are having the consequence that actually fighting between the Arab nations is being decreased, and that of course means there will be an increased confrontation with the Zionist entity.
Another indication, perhaps, of the end of the unipolar world and the emergence of the multipolar world, something we'll probably have to come back to on another show, because unfortunately we are right out of time for today. So thank you to our guest, Lo Ki, and of course our resident expert, Professor David Miller. So until next time, when Palestine Declassified, we'll be back with more forensic investigations and analysis. This is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Faqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qarati. Please stay tuned.
قرآن در باره ما رمزون می فرماد که یا ایها الذین آمنوا کتب علیکم الصیام.
Regarding the holy month of Ramadan, the Holy Quran states, all you who have faith, prescribed for you is fasting, as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-wary. What we find beautiful in this ayah is mostly the tone of expression. This means that Allah expresses in the most beautiful way His commands about fasting during the holy month of Ramadan.
Thank you.
یه آقا زاده یه میخوایم آمپول بزنیم میترسه پزشک آمپول زن.
There are cases when the children fear to have an injection by the doctors. A good doctor is the one who tries his best to give the shot in the most soft and beautiful way. Usually, a good doctor, when he faces a fearful child, pats the head of the child softly and then welcomes him with the dearest words. He tells the child that all the grown-ups have experienced injection at least once in their lifetime. There will be no pain after injection. This way of talking of a doctor to a child is exactly like that of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to his people about fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, an experience which has no fear and is sweet for all the people. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has denounced Texas Governor Greg Abbott's efforts to fortify stretches of the southern border with Mexico with razor and concertina wire. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper Punkchester Times has covered this story and tells us more. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas criticized Texas Governor Greg Abbott's initiative to reinforce sections of the southern border with Mexico with concertina and razor wire, labeling the approach ineffective. Alejandro Mayorkas, speaking at a roundtable at Homeland Security headquarters in Washington on Friday, 5th of April, highlighted that migrants were easily cutting through the barriers, impairing the ability of Customs and Border Protection, CBP, to carry out their duties. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's strategy under the umbrella of Operation Lone Star and involving the deployment of state National Guard troops includes the installation of concertina and razor wire alongside other barriers along Texas's border with Mexico. This has sparked a legal dispute between Texas and the U.S. Justice Department, particularly regarding the use of such wire. Contrary to Governor Abbott's claims attributing reduced illegal crossings to the barriers, Alejandro Mayorkas pointed out that certain border sections were fortified with razor wire last year, when migrant crossings were at record highs. He argued that crediting the decrease in encounters solely to Governor Abbott's measures is unfounded, emphasizing the complex nature of border security. Under Governor Greg Abbott's leadership, Texas has pursued an aggressive stance challenging federal authority over border and immigration policy. Alongside deploying barriers and National Guard troops, Texas has engaged in controversial actions like transporting migrants to Democratic-led cities without prior notification. Additionally, Texas has attempted to implement stringent immigration laws, exemplified by SB 4, which is currently subject to legal scrutiny. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas accused Texas of exacerbating disorder through its border efforts, emphasizing the importance of coordination between federal and state authorities in addressing immigration issues. He stressed that immigration policy falls within the exclusive purview of the federal government, reiterating the need for responsible governance in addressing border challenges. Despite facing impeachment proceedings in the House of Representatives related to his handling of immigration policy, Alejandro Mayorkas remains focused on his duties. As he prepares to testify before congressional committees, Mayorkas underscored his commitment to his work, expressing hope that the impeachment process would not detract from his responsibilities at Homeland Security Department. The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered this story. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on Friday, 5th of April, denounced Texas Governor Greg Abbott's efforts to fortify stretches of the southern border with Mexico with razor and concertina wire as ineffective, saying migrants are easily cutting through the barriers. "We do not consider concertina wire to be effective. It impairs Customs and Border Protection's ability to do its job, and we're also seeing migrants rather easily cutting through concertina wire," Mayorkas told a group of reporters who attended a roundtable on Friday, 5th of April, at Homeland Security Headquarters in Washington. As part of a broader, multi-billion-dollar campaign known as Operation Lone Star, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has instructed state National Guard troops to put up concertina and razor wire, as well as other barriers along parts of Texas's border with Mexico. The wire is currently at the center of an ongoing legal battle in federal courts of law between Texas and the U.S. Justice Department. Governor Greg Abbott argues that the barriers deter migrants from crossing into his state illegally and has credited them for a marked drop in illegal crossings along the Texas border since last year. More broadly, he has claimed that Texas actions, which also include arrests of migrants on trespassing charges, are responsible for pushing migrant crossings into neighboring Arizona and California in recent months. But Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas disputed Governor Abbott's claims on Friday, 5th of April, noting that some stretches of the Texas-Mexico border were fortified with razor wire late last year when migrant crossings were soaring to record levels, including in the Texas border town of Eagle Pass. "I know that Governor Greg Abbott has taken credit for a reduction in the number of encounters, and I would posit that the tools that he has employed, and I'm not commenting on their lawfulness or legal shortcomings, that is obviously the subject of litigation in court, but the tools that he has employed were in effect in December, and they were in effect in January," Mayorkas said. "And so to attribute the significant drop in the number of encounters to anything he has done, I would say is belied by the facts." Representatives for Texas Governor Greg Abbott did not immediately respond for requests for comment. During Governor Greg Abbott's tenure, Texas has mounted the most aggressive state effort in modern history to challenge the federal government's long-standing power to set border and immigration policy. In addition to trespassing arrests and the deployment of barriers and National Guard troops, Texas has bused tens of thousands of migrants to Democratic-led cities without notifying local authorities. Last January, the Texas National Guard commandeered a public park in Eagle Pass, Texas, and has since blocked federal Border Patrol agents from processing migrants there. Texas has also sought to implement one of the toughest state immigration laws in U.S. history. The measure, known as SB 4, would empower Texas officials to arrest and jail migrants on misdemeanor or felony charges if they are suspected of crossing into the United States without authorization and to order them to return to Mexico. The law is currently paused while a federal appeals court determines its legality. Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas said he couldn't say much about SB 4 because of the ongoing court case, but he noted that it is federal government's position that immigration policy is the exclusive province of the federal government. Alejandro Mayorkas accused Texas of trying to create disorder through its border efforts. "We think that responsible governance requires people in positions of authority to communicate, to coordinate and collaborate with one another, and the deliberate refusal to do so in an effort to sow chaos is not responsible governance." Alejandro Mayorkas, who came to the U.S. as a child refugee from Cuba, has found himself at the center of the nation's contentious debate over immigration policy. It's a debate that has intensified in recent years because of record levels of migrant apprehensions reported along the southern border with Mexico. Earlier this year, the Republican-led House of Representatives impeached Alejandro Mayorkas on charges that he breached the public's trust and failed to fully enforce U.S. immigration laws, making him the first cabinet secretary to be impeached since the 1870s. Alejandro Mayorkas has not been accused of personal misconduct, and Democrats have said Republicans impeached him solely because of immigration policy differences. The House impeachment managers are expected to deliver the articles of impeachment to the Democratic-led Senate next Wednesday, when Mayorkas is also set to testify before two congressional committees for funding hearings. On Friday, 5th of April, Mayorkas reiterated that he remains focused on his day job and said he hasn't thought about whether he'd prefer that the Senate hold a trial or quickly dismiss the impeachment articles against him.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we will be exploring the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Salamu alaikum, Sister Salma, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
So So we've been discussing this question for a few episodes, and you know about how to guide the teenage son, especially before they grow up and before it's too late.
Yeah.
And you gave some very nice important points where, you know, you mentioned about trustworthiness, truthfulness, grateful to parents, like how to inculcate all of these characteristics in the child. And the last point we have been discussing was, you know, how to instill not getting attracted to this world and the worldly things in easily, and
material
that at times, yeah, there's material stuff, which at times is very difficult. So you've been mentioning that. Do you have anything more to say about that, or should we go to the next point?
Yeah, we go to the next point now. The next point is wasting time and money. It's important to inculcate that to a young child when he grows up at about maybe 11, 12,
yeah,
when you start giving him some pocket money to choose, maybe buying his stuff or maybe for school or something like that. You have to really gently explain him that this money doesn't come by easy, and you don't have to waste it or, you know, just lose it. Sometimes this child is so careless that he just puts aside his money and loses it, or it's being stolen or stepped,
yeah,
things like that. Or not to waste it. For example, waste in buying things that are unnecessary, or keep on buying things that, you know, or, okay, use to what you require and need.
Yeah.
And also you at the same time, don't go to places where your daughter or son feels that you're shopping every day.
Yeah.
You know, some mothers have this habit that they want to shop the best clothes and they keep on shopping, and then the child asks, but you have this at home. The child is innocent. They'll ask them, you have this, you have two of these at home.
Yeah.
Why do you want to buy? And the mother says, no, just for my own fancy. For example, I like the style of it. So the child will also learn. Yeah, when you like a style of it, you keep on buying. But that's nothing other than israf.
Yeah, and I think it's sometimes there's this fine line between wasting and kind of thinking that this is not important. So, for example, I remember there was a time when I was young, when I used to, like, my flash disks, I was given flash disks and it got lost. And this, you know, my mom was like, it's not good. You know, and I was like, no, this is worldly things. You know, you don't have to care about these things. And then she was like, no, that's
yeah, exactly. Yeah, not laying importance on the things that you buy and then when it's lost, right?
Yeah,
so yeah, no, that even is israf. In effect, that you have to buy again.
Yeah.
In the long run, you need
exactly
it, right? So it's like if, for example, you iron roughly your clothes and they get burnt, it's just a worldly thing. No, it doesn't mean that you take care of it. Or you wear your shoes. In fact, our Ahlul Bayt used to have the clothes, special attire for outside and for the home wear.
Yeah.
So outside, you know, your clothes are preserved so that you don't keep on buying other clothes. And home wear is like, you know, they get worn out and everything. So it doesn't mean that, you know, you keep on, you know, like you're underestimating the fact that this dunya is nothing, and
yeah,
okay,
everything,
yeah,
everything,
you know,
it's
goes,
okay,
yeah, it's okay. No, that's wasting actually. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also says, "Kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu," so eat and drink, but do not do israf. And sometimes israf can be done in also overeating, for example, as far as eating is concerned,
yeah,
you know, overdoing something. So israf is not just that you for example, not do it, or it
yeah,
can be done.
Sometimes excessive doing it,
and
yeah,
or not doing it at all is also israf. For example, sometimes we have some food that is left over, and we feel that if we don't eat it, it will be israf. No, our stomachs will pain in the end, so that is more israf. So we have to decipher.
Yeah, very true. So we're just going to take a quick break and pick up shortly from this.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing a very important aspect to inculcate in our children, which is how to handle money. And you've been mentioning about, you know, we don't have to waste it or uselessly spend it. And, you know, money is actually something that we have to be careful about, and just generally to instill that in our children.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do you have anything more to say?
Yeah, the last but not least is one master character trait and virtue that by observing all these things that I talked about in the previous programs and even today some of them, is that that piety will be achieved.
Mm.
That piety that we are working for without spelling it to be a taqwa, a piety, telling them, be pious, be pious. All these qualities will instill a piety in him, a fear of him, that what he's doing, he should be aware, he should be truthful, he should be trustworthy, he should not, you know, like me, he should be grateful to his parents, that Allah has given him such good parents, or parents at least.
Yeah.
He should be grateful for that, and he should be also not wasting his time, money, energy, be focused, be determined. All these things, if you go and see, gives a perfect plan for a teenager to tread on that path, that of perfection that Allah wants for him, and that his growth lies in it, and he will become successful in both worlds. So without telling, you know, come, I teach you about piety. You know what piety is?
Yeah.
No. Teach about all these things, truthfulness, trustworthiness, you know, like respecting parents, respecting elders, all these things come under being grateful, of course, to parents, because parents would like their children to respect elders also.
Definitely.
Being determined, having a goal, a purpose, not wasting time, money, you know,
all this together
bring about the taqwa. So we as elders also, if we want the taqwa, we should practice all this, and more so teenagers, because teenagers have that aptitude of picking up very fast, being influenced.
Yeah.
You know, so if we, you know, just they will think about it. They would, you know, you can fool a child easily, but you can't fool a teenager or an adult. They will see your actions, that if they're doing that and their contrary is speaking something else. So we should be very careful, especially in your teenagers. If you want to start right away, we can do that without, you know, beforehand. Like this parent, mashallah, she's very determined to do a great job on her teenager. I pray for that to happen.
Inshallah.
So she's been like wanting to know beforehand.
Yeah, and I think when you see such a teenager, you know, who has all these qualities, you kind of have a certain sort of
love and attraction,
them.
Right?
Yeah, because it's something very hard to come by, and it's something very hard. They have to have a lot of, you know, willpower to be able to do all of this. So it's definitely.
And our scholars were like that. Imagine those tender teenagers were like that.
Yeah.
Like great scholar of Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. He was just 17 when he came, and how he was as a teenager, you know, you feel, mashallah, what upbringing he must have had, that he had all those quality.
Yeah.
And that's why when he passed away, like, he was so, mashallah, with so many good, you know, like, he left behind so many good teachings and books and
definitely. And I think just recently we were talking to some of the, we were seeing actually a video, and they were saying, you know, why do we have all these shuhada martyrs, streets name, and like, why is it so important to constantly remind yourself that, okay, this is the, they know that they live in the street, and they don't know much about that shaheed, but
yeah.
Just this reminder that you have these kind of youth who are able to be such pure people,
accomplish such things,
and it was hard, but they managed, so we can
exactly, and they were not masoom, so if they were not, and they could, so why not us?
Definitely,
any teenager, if he sees and is given this kind of atmosphere, will reach great heights.
Definitely,
I believe that strongly,
inshallah. So we're just going to take another short break, and we'll be back soon.
Ya mubdi al khayrat,
the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Welcome back, and we're going to pose another question where somebody has asked, my 15-year-old daughter doesn't talk about any of her problems with me, and I can know she's going through some tough times, but she feels I'm nagging when I ask her how she's facing all these problems. How do I make her confide in me?
When teenagers, come of that age, they suddenly become aloof.
Yeah.
You know, because they want their independence. It's not a wrong thing. We should allow that also. But this parent seems like she must be nagging. if that girl feels like she's nagging, okay. her daughter feels like she's nagging, because children know when the parents are not nagging or they are nagging, right? When you keep on asking, keep on stressing, then the child will not feel like, in fact, they'll be more stubborn not to say that, yeah?
Mm.
So what teenagers, especially girls, they're soft-hearted, they need support, love, empathy, all these things are very important. So if the parent gives that quiet moment and then quickly steals the moment when the child is talking,
yeah,
you know, finds a good moment and becomes an active listener. This is very important. Active listening. Active listening is when you're, for example, doing even something and the child wants to talk a little to you, immediately go to the child and listen to them, especially when it comes to teenagers and especially when it comes to this girl who's 15-year-old and doesn't want to talk about anything. At some point in time, the parents will try to make them happier.
Yeah?
Maybe cook their best meal or make them laugh or, you know, become lighthearted. Even the mood of the home, you know, the atmosphere should be so lighthearted so that it penetrates in the mind and heart. And not anxiety filled that you're worried, she's worried. Okay, there's a kind of ice in between. Calm behavior, okay, this happens, this is normal. Then slowly, slowly they let out. As soon as they start talking, grasp the moment. Whatever you're doing, if they need you, grasp the moment. Not that, okay, now I'm doing, hold on, let me finish this ironing of mine or cooking of mine, then I'm coming to sit with you. No. Leave that aside, however urgent it might be, which is not that much urgent, I believe.
Mm.
Any home task cannot be that urgent. It can wait a little. And go and talk and confide so that the girl can confide. And when she sees that there's a reassurance, there's a love, there's a empathy, obviously she will even talk about it.
Yeah.
Whatever be it, even it'll be little, she won't let out, don't expect that they let out each and every detail of what they're going through. But they will at least say what's going on. Maybe she lost her friend. Maybe she fought with her friend, or maybe she was scolded by her teacher, or given warnings, or harmed by somebody, or hit by somebody. She will talk about it then, yeah? What's bothering her? Teenagers, they have these kind of problems.
And I feel like many times the teenagers feel that, you know, the parents don't take their problems seriously, you know, like, for example, this is important to me, but if my mother just takes it lightly, or, you know, then I feel like she doesn't understand me, you know,
exactly.
Like, she doesn't get me.
But my friend understands
But
me.
Yeah, for example, others understand me. So this kind of relationship, I feel like I had a very nice relationship with my mom. She would, you know, try and understand me. She would try and be an active listener. And I felt like that is the main reason why I never fell astray, because she was constantly like there, was backing me up, you know, was giving me that support, which I felt like I was...
There's somebody to understand me and love
me. She understands me.
And don't complain.
Definitely.
Right?
So I think that is very important. So we're going to end here, and inshallah, maybe we can expand on this in the next episode. Thank you so much for your valuable time, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening, and this was IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. If you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI, which is Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can also email us on englishradio@irib.ir. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
The saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire kills scores more Palestinians in Gaza, as the death toll from the regime's genocide surpasses 33,200, mostly women and children. The World Court begins its two-day hearings on a case brought by Nicaragua against Germany that's accused of facilitating the Israeli genocide in Gaza by arming Tel Aviv.